Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A tentative deal for striking workers at Kellogg's. A national worker safety group sends a powerful message to those in favor of a government shutdown. And today on the show, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades and another Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, December 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Mr. Dorsey Hager is going to be our first guest on the show, longtime contributor and sponsor of America's Workforce. He comes to us from the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You could follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. Three things we're going to get into. Big visit by Vice President Kamala Harris and Marty Walsh, the U.S. Secretary of Labor. They visited Local 189. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the contents of that visit, which primarily involves the infrastructure bill. We have a piece of legislation, well over $1 trillion, that's going to change the infrastructure for the better in America. And if you've been listening to Dorsey for any duration, there's been a lot going on in Central Ohio, and he's in the middle of it all. So this is just going to accelerate that. And when you think about the Columbus area, you got the state capitol there. You got the Ohio State University, got a lot of people that are staying in town after they graduate from college. They got a great community college network there, a lot of high tech going on. Facebook, Google, Amazon have all staged a huge presence in Central Ohio, and it's causing a lot of building going on. And we're going to talk about what lies ahead for 2022. So we'll get into all of that with Dorsey Hager. And regarding that infrastructure bill, this is courtesy of our labor writer, Mark Grunberg. You never know what's in these pieces of legislation. And as you know, there is a truck driver shortage in America. We're talking at least 80,000 drivers are needed right now, 80,000. So what they did in that infrastructure bill, they lower the age. And this was pretty much lobbied for by the trucking industry. Lamont Bird is head of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Union Health and Safety. In fact, he's been on the show a couple of times. Really good guy. And he's not too happy about this. He said there are some in the trucking industry, and the some he's talking about is the lobbyists. There are some who view lowering the minimum driving age for commercial drivers to 18 as one solution to the increasing demand for qualified drivers. Well, the Teamsters were kind of concerned about this issue. As it should be noted, there is a significant amount of evidence which indicates young drivers are more likely to be involved in crashes. Yes, yes. And when you follow the money on this, there's a great organization out there called opensecrets.org. You might want to check them out, opensecrets.org. And they track spending by lobbyists. And the American Trucking Association spent $1.5 million to influence lawmakers on trucking issues just in the first 9 months of this year. The industry total was $8 million. And Lamont Bird is not happy about what's happened here. And both Democrats and Republicans voted to lower the age. Yeah, we'll have to get him on the show down the road here. So Dorsey Hager will get into all of this and more. Many times on the show, Dorsey has talked about Driving Futures, a program down in Columbus, which trains young people in high school, getting out of high school, on that verge of graduation to get involved in the trucking industry. So I'm sure that'll be a component of that discussion on the show. Well, this is the first Friday of the new month, the month being December, and we started this little feature called First Friday with Fred, and Fred is Fred Redmond, who is still with the United Steelworkers and soon to be the Secretary Treasurer. I think he's already Secretary Treasurer, but he's wearing two hats right now, and he's trying to wrap up work with the Steelworkers. He's been with the Steelworkers since 1973. Great guy. Great guy. Now, he's going to talk about the Build Back Better Act. Steelworkers are 100% behind it. We have the infrastructure now. We have to have more. And this is from Tom Conway, the president of the Steelworkers. He said the following: President Biden's ambitious Build Back Better agenda presented a once-in-a-lifetime generation opportunity to invest in the future of the middle class while also making our nation more secure today, building on the success of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. This bill now puts us on a path to also rebuild our nation's human infrastructure. Initiatives like expanding early childhood education, investing in health care, ensuring workplace rights. Boy, that's a big one. Providing paid family leave and facilitating industrial investments to help combat climate change. This will all supply badly needed resources to workers as well as their families. And that's Tom Conway, president of the United Steelworkers. So we'll get into that. And also talk about what's going on in America with all these strikes. There is change happening. Workers flexing their muscle, speaking loud and proud. So Fred Redmond will button up the show today. Speaking of workers, Kellogg's, the cereal giant, is nearing a deal with its 1,400 worker-strong union, potentially ending a strike that's almost 2 months long. The agreement, potential agreement, it's tentative, with the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union includes, and I quote, an accelerated, defined path to legacy wages and benefits for transitional employees and wage increases and enhanced benefits for all. Now, this is according to a statement from Kellogg. A large sticking point during the talks is the two-tier employment structure at the company, separated between longer-term, what's called legacy workers, and shorter-term transition workers who can graduate higher legacy worker pay and benefits. The new agreement calls to simply implement legacy status to all employees working for longer than 4 years. That's a step in the right direction. It would also include a 3% graduation rate at each plant each year of the 5-year contract and 3% wage increase for legacy workers upon ratification with cost of living adjustments after that. Now, the union plans to hold a vote this Sunday, September 5th. So my guess we'll have an answer on a new contract by Monday. Starbucks is fighting an expanded effort to unionize its stores, even as a union vote proceeds at 3 of the coffee chain's locations in Buffalo, New York. Union organizers from 3 additional Buffalo area stores appeared before the National Labor Relations Board yesterday, asking to hold union votes at each of their stores. Now, the workers say they want more input on pay and store operations, and they're seeking representation by Workers United, which is an affiliate of SEIU. Starbucks attorney at the hearing reiterated the company's request to conduct one vote with all 20 stores in the Buffalo area. Now, the labor board hearing is expected to last for several days. Now, in late October, the labor board in the Buffalo region approved union votes at 3 separate Buffalo area stores. Starbucks has appealed that ruling to the full labor board in Washington, but voting began last month despite that appeal. Now, the labor board could count those votes as early as next Thursday, December 9th. Starbucks has said around 111 employees are eligible to vote at those three stores. That's what the company is saying. By the way, the company has never had unionized workers in the country in its 50-year history. The company says its 8,000 company-owned U.S. stores function best when it has flexibility and can work directly with employees. You don't need a union. Come on. What do you need a union for? Got a comment here from Jessica Martinez. She is co-director of the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. And we have referenced them on the show many, many times. National COSH. That's their Twitter handle. Great organization. And they are quite concerned. You probably have heard that there might be another government shutdown. Well, this is what Jessica said. More than 1,900 people in the country have died of COVID-19 in one day. This was on Wednesday. 1,900 people die. And there is a significant risk that the Omicron variant will increase illness and health from the virus, which is still spreading in U.S. homes, workplaces, and communities. Well, in the face of these facts, Jessica says, it is sickening that attention-grabbing politicians are threatening to shut down the entire U.S. government over a science-based OSHA standard that offers workers important protections against a deadly infectious disease. Workers need safety on the job, not lethal threats from political opportunists. She goes on to say, President Biden and responsible leaders in Congress must stand up to this blackmail. We need full, unrestricted funding for our government, including the vital public health services required to cope with a global pandemic. Again, this is Jessica Martinez speaking, co-executive director of the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. One of many groups, government groups, that would be shut down when we have a government shutdown. It's hard to believe that they're even thinking in that direction. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration is extending the period for submitting comments on the advance notice of proposed rulemaking for heat injury and illness prevention in outdoor and indoor work settings. The comments must now be submitted by January 26 of next year. That's pretty much a 30-day extension for the stakeholders. Currently, OSHA does not have a heat-specific standard to protect millions of workers in indoor and outdoor work settings from exposure to hazardous heat conditions. In recent months, OSHA has initiated several efforts to protect workers from heat-related illnesses and deaths while working in hazardously hot outdoor and indoor environments. And we saw people die in the spring, especially out in the Pacific Northwest, where temperatures are usually in the mid-60s, and the farm workers there were working in fields with temperatures at 115 degrees. Oh, there's no climate change. No, don't worry about that. All right, we have to break. When we come back, Dorsey Hager on the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades Report.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective Democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. So as you know, Christmas is right around the corner. And if you're looking for American-made shopping gifts, I urge you to check out the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Just go to AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org, and they are out with their 2021 Made in America Holiday Gift Guide. And they have gifts made at companies, 100 companies from all 50 states, including the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico. So you might want to check that out. We had Scott Paul of the Alliance on the show on Monday, and he was talking all about this. They've been doing this for 8 years now, 8 years. And if you go to the website, AmericanManufacturing.org, you'll see the top 10 reasons to shop Made in America. To me, it's a no-brainer. Come on. Shop American. Make sure you put American people to work. We want to do that and enhance that as much as we can because so darn many jobs have gone to China. All right, let's go to a line number one. Welcome a dear friend, regular contributor to America's Workforce, hardworking guy, always networking, making things happening in Central Ohio, Mr. Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. How do you like that intro, Mr. Hager?
I like it a lot, especially heading into our first Friday of December as we begin the countdown to Christmas and also bowl season. So the bowl games will be in wide variety here very soon. So I like it a lot. Thanks for the intro.
All right, now for the downside. What the hell happened to the Ohio State University last week? Ay, ay, ay.
Wow. Six and a half point favorites on the road at Michigan, which I thought was a lot. We all knew Michigan's defense was really good. Two great defensive ends. One's going to be a top five pick. The other one's going to be a first round pick. You know, we struggled with penalties. We had we were behind the chains most of the day, first and 15. The inability to run the ball, unfortunately, made us, you know, one dimensional. Our defense never made adjustments. The only time we stopped Michigan in the second half was the last drive. So just a recipe for disaster. But as bad as we played, we were in the game the whole time, but still, losing to our rivals for the first time in 10 years is not a good thing, and it was Harbaugh's first win. And, of course, you know, losing to Michigan and everything that comes with it, you know, you don't get to play in the Big Ten championship games. You don't get a chance for a Big Ten title. You don't get a chance to play in the playoffs. So, but the interesting stat I saw, too, Ohio State still, as talented as they are, they're very young. They played 17 freshmen and true freshmen in that game. And if you remember, the game was canceled last year because of COVID. So that's right. 17 players that had significant playing time that had no, you know, idea that was their first presence of the game, and they had no idea of the intensity and the rivalry and everything. And you know, Michigan came out angry. They came out mad. They did everything they had to do. They played hard. They threw the kitchen sink at Ohio State, and they ended up winning the game. So, you know, from an Ohio State fan, I'm very sad and depressed. But if I'm a college football fan, I think maybe I'm happy that the rivalry is starting to come back a little bit, but they come here next year, so it'll be interesting.
It will be. It will be. I knew I'd get a good comment from you because you're such a big, big football fan, and I'll tell you, that was a tough one to watch. It really was a tough one to watch, really. All right, let's talk about what's happening in Central Ohio. And a couple of weeks ago, the Vice President, Kamala Harris, and Marty Walsh, the Secretary of Labor, visited, what is it, Plumbers, Pipe Fitters, Local 189. And I know they've been touring all around the country talking about infrastructure. I would imagine you were part of that little discussion down there, right?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, obviously they got the infrastructure bill passed, so they're heading out, you know, the VP, the president, Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh. I see the Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, is out on the road as well. And not only are they out touting the importance of this infrastructure bill, which we all know how important it is and how it's going to be great for the country, and it's going to put more people to work, it's going to keep people to work, it's going to repair and replace some of our old our bridges and our roads and our aging infrastructure. But they're also meeting, you know, Mayor Ginther was there, there were city council members there, there were local state representatives. They're also meeting with them to let them know, you know, how they can utilize the money that's coming from the federal government, you know, for local infrastructure, which is great because, like you and I talked off the air, that translates into lots and lots of opportunities and lots of building trades jobs. And like I said, putting and keeping people to work. But the VP was incredible. She gave a great speech after she toured the training center at 189. The guys over at 189, the training director, Rich Manley, the business manager, Tim Ely, the agents, Jeff Carey, and Danny McHale did an incredible job hosting the event. And the VP was really impressed with what 189 does, what the building trades does as a whole, when it comes to outreach, diversification, the training, you know, our state-of-the-art training centers that we talk about all the time. And then Marty, I mean, it was great to see, you know, Secretary of Labor again, the former mayor of Boston, the former head of the Boston Building Trades in town. And, you know, he had his labor card with him, still pays his dues every day, and talked to him afterwards with a couple local people from the laborers, Sarah Geis and Mike Engbert, and Marty just loved it. I mean, you could tell he didn't want to leave. He was with his people, and, you know, we were talking sewers and roads and water lines and clean water systems and, you know, water treatment facilities and bridges and everything right there in the wheelhouse of laborers and the building trades. And it was great to catch up with him. And if you remember a couple of years ago when he was mayor of Boston, you and I talked about him, and he came into Columbus. He was going around the country visiting with several of the large cities. And it was then that I sat down with him and had a great conversation with him about community benefit agreements, about pre-apprenticeship programs and apprenticeship readiness programs like the ones that they're doing in Boston, you know, about the continued diversification of the trades, not only local hiring, but also being intentional and deliberate in our outreach to women and people of color to try to give a large segment of the population, especially economically disadvantaged population, to let them know about these opportunities that exist in the trades. So that way we can kind of give everybody an opportunity to get on that path, that direct path to the middle class. So Marty's doing a great job as Secretary of Labor. We think the VP is doing a tremendous job too. You know, I said this to my members who called and texted me afterwards when I was on my way home, or, you know, they saw the highlights, not only on the local news, but also the national news. And you could see the 189 symbol there, and you could see a lot of us there in the crowd. You know, I have never heard an administration, you know, in my lifetime, you know, mention the words apprenticeship and union as much and as often and as well as this administration does. And they have a firm understanding, and there's no denial that they understand what apprenticeships mean to people, what apprenticeships can do, how they can change somebody's life and livelihood, and what having a union card in your pocket can do for not only for you and your family, but also to end generational poverty. And like I said, get you on that path to the middle class. Mm-hmm. So just a great day. And like I said, hats off to the guys at 189, the guys and girls at 189. They did a great job hosting the event. There was a lot of people in attendance. The head of the AFL-CIO, Tim Berger, was there as well. You know, it's just an awesome event, and great for them to come in and talk about this infrastructure bill. It's so important to everybody.
Do we have any rundown right now on the infrastructure bill? I'm hearing that there's some components that are going to start right away, especially like with mass transit. But when it comes to the actual building, and there's a lot that needs to be done. I mean, geez, I mean, there's so many parts of America that are backward right now. But did they get into any of the specifics on that? I'm just wondering.
They didn't get into the specifics, but a couple of things that I've been reading about, and I know that everybody is going to go through it and they're going to look at things that may affect them on a day to day or affect them personally. And obviously I'm going to be a little biased here, and you and I talk in our interviews, and we talk a lot off the air as well about this, but I'm really excited about the money that's there for the expansion of Amtrak. I mean, there's talk in there that they're going to construct a line that's going to go from Cleveland to Columbus to Cincinnati. And, you know, you think about that. I'm going to be coming up to Cleveland in a couple of weeks, see the Browns. And I don't mind the drive up and the parking and everything and being with my friends and the tailgating and everything. But, wow, it would be nice to, like, drive to the station, leave my car, get on an Amtrak train, maybe relax, maybe read the newspaper, maybe get my laptop out or my iPad, do a little work, and have that 90-minute train ride that drops you off up there near the stadium. See the game, then get back on the train and come home and save all that wear and tear on your vehicle, but not only the time that it takes you to get there, but also all the wear and tear and all the traffic and congestion that affects the roads. You know, I have these conversations constantly with our mayor here, our city council. You know, I think they definitely want to do something here in Columbus and Central Ohio to alleviate some of the issues that come with growth and expansion. And the best one is, you know, I say this stuff all the time, Ohio is the largest city in the United States that doesn't have mass transit, so we don't have light rail, we don't have any of that. And there's a lot of money involved to do that, you know, and it would be great if we could do that, and that would, I think that would take a lot of the strain and pressure off of our roads and off of our highway systems, you know, our outer belt and also the 70-71 that go through the city. So I'm excited about the investment and the expansion of Amtrak. I think if we can look to do something with that, expand that to the Midwest, not only Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, like we talked about, but, you know, Marietta, Toledo, to connect all five corners of the state, but and even expanding westward, you know, Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, Chicago, which we have a lot of people that travel there for work, you know, on a daily basis from Columbus. I think that would be really interesting. That's what I'm excited about.
I think a lot of people would take advantage of that. My sister, for one, this was about a year and a half ago, her son, and he has since moved to the Pacific Northwest. He lived in Connecticut, and they went up there. They took the Amtrak and had the time of their life because, as you know, Dorsey, in the Northeast Corridor, Amtrak is huge. I mean, it's in fact, Joe Biden uses it all the time. He loves it. And I just wish that same kind of mentality would come over to the Midwest. And you feel, especially now, that might come to fruition then?
I think so, and I think a lot is dependent on the administration and the discussions that they're having. And again, I think that a lot of the mayors in the large cities, and I think even people throughout the state, understand that we have an infrastructure problem here, and that, you know, high-speed train or light rail could go a long way into alleviating a lot of those pains and pressures and issues that we're having. So I'm glad that the discussions are there. I hope that they, you know, the money that's there is used wisely. And, you know, I think it would be great in 68 years that we're talking about, you know, this not only being constructed, but maybe even being finished.
Yeah.
I said, you know, and guys here in Columbus, you know, that I have friends that run up midweek all the time and catch Cavs games and stuff. I mean, how nice would it be to get off work at 5, hop on the train, get up there at 6:30 for a 7:05 tip, game's over, you get back on the train, you come home, and you're home by 11:30. I mean, you know, I think it would be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Well, we'll see what happens here. I mean, there's a lot of money, over $1 trillion, and then they want to add on to it with the Build Back Better deal as well. Dorsey Hager on our live line. He is the executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Website, columbusconstruction.org. Build Central OH. That's where you can follow them on Twitter. Later in the show, Mr. Fred Redmond. It's the first Friday with Fred. Fred Redmond, the secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO, still with the steelworkers. He's going to talk about infrastructure as well. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans.
Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, we're available on six platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get a chance, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those five-star ratings, by the way. All right, let's go back to our live line and rejoin Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Dorsey, I was thinking about this infrastructure bill, and I think it's $65 billion. $65 billion is going to go to broadband. And I remember in past discussions with you, Facebook and Google are building huge, huge facilities in Central Ohio. And I'm thinking this has got to be enormous, especially for the trades and pumping in all that infrastructure money, especially when it comes to broadband, which we really need. Do we have any assessment on that? And what's the mood down there regarding the broadband component?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really, really excited about the broadband. I know you and I have talked in the past about, you know, especially in the rural areas outside of Columbus and outside of Franklin County, of fixing the digital divide, you know, kids, even college age students that are taking classes online, you know, that are unable to access internet. You know, we go into their Starbucks, going to their, you know, McDonald's and stuff to be able to have access to the internet. So I think it's going to be great, for, especially for Midwestern states. But I think we're really going to benefit here as well, like you said, is Facebook and Google continue to grow, expand, and build. And then, you know, the Amazons are coming, you know, some of the other ones as well. I think it's going to be a huge asset because one of the big reasons why a lot of these huge tech giants are coming here is because of the accessibility of college graduates and workers, because we have so many institutions here. Well, if we can, like I said, fix that digital divide, get more people trained, get more people educated, I think that that's going to just make us a better Columbus Central Ohio, a better selling point to continue to attract some of these large tech giants. So it's very exciting. It's very exciting.
Well, as you know, there is a truck driver shortage, and we've had a number of conversations about driving futures. There's building futures, there's driving futures for young people. And I don't know if you know this, but in the infrastructure bill, I guess they lowered the age to 18. And this was pushed by the trucking industry because like 80,000 drivers that they need right now. And I don't know how many this will add to the fold, but there's some pushback by the Teamsters on this, as well as the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, because when you know how it is with young people, they just don't have the experience. And then you throw an 18-wheeler behind them. Ooh, I don't know about that component. But bottom line is driving futures. Just refresh me on that program. That's like post-high school, right?
Yeah, post-high school. You know, obviously we deal with a lot of people who are economically disadvantaged, either unemployed or underemployed, maybe had no idea about the opportunities that in front of them. And, you know, for CDL license and training, you know, it's usually 4 to 6 weeks. It's anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000. So if you take somebody who's not employed or maybe making minimum wage, that's a lot of money. And a lot of the people that apply understand the kind of opportunities that they can get if they take this training, but they're just, you know, unfortunately they don't have the financial resources to be able to afford the training. And that's what we do for them. And then they kind of have their pick of the litter of, you know, where they want to go to with our partners there and the Teamsters to go to work. And like I said, right now, the average starting salary for a driving futures graduate with immediate placements right around 65,000 a year. And that's a good thing, but there's also, you know, some concerns. And one of the concerns is this, and I've had this conversation come up in the last couple of weeks. You know, I'm sure in Cleveland you guys have the same issue in Columbus. You know, with the baby boomers retiring, we're seeing a lot of people retiring from, you know, driving school buses and stuff. And we've had schools that have had to double up on bus routes, even had to cancel, you know, certain days of the week because they don't have enough bus drivers. So I'm constantly having people reach out to me and say, hey, you know, driving future is this, driving future is that, you know, more kids, you know, we got to replace these bus drivers. But here's the thing, and I don't, you know, mean to sound like the greedy union guy here, but you know, our kids are graduating and they're going to work for Columbus Distributing or Sigma or UPS, and they're starting off at $64,000-$65,000 an hour and they're home every night. They're not going to go work for a local school district and drive a school bus for $16.85, $18, or $20 an hour. They're just not going to do it. You know, and I don't know what that answer is, and I don't know how we replace a lot of these school bus drivers, and we would love to be a part of the solution, but just, you know, right now that's just the way it is. These kids are going to go to these jobs where there's tremendous opportunity and they're paying, you know, very, very well.
I just want to correct you. You said $65,000 an hour.
$65,000 a year. Yeah, $65,000. That's Jeff Bezos' money there. Yeah, $65,000 a year. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Not a problem. Not a problem. Well, yeah. The bottom line is this: the infrastructure bill is a huge boom to the economy, and you know, right now the trades are busy. Dorsey, it's going to explode here, and I'm looking at next year. Any forecast that you can lay on us right now? I mean, it's big, and it's only going to get bigger. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's big, and it's only going to get bigger. And here's the thing, too: our managers, our agents, our training directors, and each individual local, you know, they have their own autonomy, and they're looking at ways to attack the workforce development issue. Obviously, the building trades is helping. We're all in partnership with Building Futures. We're all in partnership with doing outreach and stuff. You know, a year ago, you know, for the first time in the history of the Columbus building trades, we put on a communications director, and her number one priority, Kelly Harrop, her number one priority is outreach and running the Building Futures program. So that's all workforce development and outreach. That's 95% of her job and her tasks and her duties, and she's doing a great job of it. But, you know, as our managers and agents meet with these general contractors, construction managers, end users, you know, they're not dumb. They can read the reports as well. They can see what's coming, not only in the next few months, but the next year, the next 2 years, the next 5 years. And our managers and agents know how many people that they're going to need, and these end users know as well. So we're having these conversations. We're attacking the workforce development goals. And it's like I told our managers and agents in a meeting a couple of weeks ago, if you guys or if we collectively can figure out how to address this and address it wisely, we're going to put our contractors at the front of the line to be the most competitive to get this work. And that's what we have to think about, because it's creating jobs for our contractors, which in turn creates jobs for our members, which in turn creates, you know, financial opportunities for our members and their families. And that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Sounds good. Exciting year ahead. No doubt about that. We get this variant behind us, and look out. Look out. The American economy, you think it's pretty decent now. And I know the market's taken a few hits because of that, but I'm looking forward to 2022 and getting all this pandemic stuff behind us. Dorsey, I'm going to leave it on that note. Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Again, the website columbusconstruction.org. You can follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. You take care, my brother. Best of the holiday season to you, your staff, and all the trades in Central Ohio. And we'll talk in the new year. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan. Like you said, 2022 is going to be exciting. So have a great Christmas. Have a great new year. Have a great holiday season. Enjoy the bowl games, and we'll talk soon. Thanks again.
You got it. All right, quick break. When we come back, Fred Redmond of the AFL-CIO and the Steelworkers. It's the first Friday with Fred right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Well, it is December 3rd, first Friday in December, and we started this little feature called The First Friday with Fred. And Fred is Fred Redman, who is still juggling two hats here with the steelworkers and the AFL-CIO. Just about maybe 2 months ago, he got the secretary treasurer position of the AFL-CIO, and he's still working the steelworkers. There's a transition going on, so he's a busy, busy guy. Fred Redman, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Thank you, Flash. Good to be here. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good, good. So I guess what, in the first quarter or the end of the first quarter, you'll be officially out of the steel? Well, you're always going to be a steel worker. You know that.
Oh, yeah, I'm a steel worker for life. But, you know, right now, I'm, you know, the plan is I'm going to retire early in the first quarter of next year from the steel workers union. And, you know, like you said, I'll always be a steel worker, but, you know, once I retire, I'll be devoting a 100% of my time towards my position as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. And this position, after the untimely death of Rich Trumka, Leah Shuler was elected by the Executive Council to fulfill Rich Trumka's the remainder of his term, which expire in June of next year, 2022, and I was elected by the Executive Council to fulfill Liz's position as Secretary Treasurer. And in June, our plans is myself and Liz is to run for re-election at the AFL-CIO convention.
And that'll be a four-year term, right?
That'll be a four-year term, right.
Got it, got it. I want to tell you something, Fred. Liz is a rock star. I mean, I'm seeing her everywhere. And in fact, a Business Insider just did a feature on her on her first 100 days. They always do this for presidents, you know, first 100 days. And she's really doing a great job on the media circuit. She's going to picket lines. I mean, she's a fighter. She's a fighter, I'll tell you.
She's amazing. She's an amazing leader.
Yeah, good stuff.
Very amazing.
Good.
It's been my honor to be working with her. But she's an amazing trade unionist and a remarkable individual.
Yeah, we're going to be setting up an interview with her in the first part of the year, sometime in January, because I just wanted to give her some breathing room. We've had her on the show a number of times, but I know she's really, really busy, especially with, it's been a crazy year this year, especially with the passing of Rich Trumka, but onward and upward. You got to keep moving forward. That being said, I want to talk about the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better. And I saw the comment by Tom Conway. Tom, of course, is the international president of the steelworkers. And we have the infrastructure bill as law. Biden signed it into law a couple weeks back. So the next mission here is Build Back Better. I'd like to get your perspective on this, because this is legislation that, well, it's having a tough time with the Democrats. I know that. I'd just like to get your position on it. Go ahead.
Well, the Build Back Better bill is the second piece of the infrastructure bill. The second piece is the fiscal and human infrastructure. Bill will not only, you know, provide services in terms of health care. It will, you know, extend insurance benefits for working people throughout this country. But it also put some vital resources into, you know, into our environment, you know, to try to reach certain deadlines and targets, you know, to deal with climate change. So this is an important bill. I mean, this bill touches aspects of senior citizens, students, working people, and everybody in this country. I mean, we've been devastated by COVID, and the bill is in conjunction with the infrastructure bill, which we was glad, you know, which we was very excited about the passing of the infrastructure bill. But look, the Build Back Better bill, you know, we have some hurdles. We got some recalcitrant, I guess that's a nice way to say it, members of the Democratic Party. But look, I feel confident that through internal negotiations within the party, and hopefully with the convincing of some moderate Republicans, that we'll be able to get this thing over the finish line.
Bill Samuel, who is the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO. I know you know him very, very well. He said on the show the last time we had him on that he expects some passage right around Christmas. I'm just wondering, you think that's doable? What's your take on it?
Well, from what we've, you know, in discussions we've been in, Flash, on Capitol Hill, that is doable. I mean, you know, it's going to take a lot of work. But, you know, what we're doing is, you know, we're really, really engaging our members into engaging with their representatives on Capitol Hill. There's been some give and take in regards to the bill. There's been some minor adjustments to the bill. But the bill still does what it is intended to do, and that is to deal with the issue of climate change, to deal with child care, to deal with health care, to deal with student loans. But there's been some give and take, and, you know, that's good because that's how the process is supposed to work. So we're moving closer. I think some of the folks on the Democratic side of the aisle are starting to come around, and there's also been some strong engagement with some of the more moderate Republicans on their side of the aisle. So hopefully, you know, the good news is people are rolling up their sleeves, they're working hard, and the Christmas deadline is still a possibility. So we'll have to wait and see. But and the president, he's just fantastic. I mean, he's working, you know, he's working very hard. He's having discussions on Capitol Hill at the White House. So hopefully we're optimistic that it could still get done before the end of the year.
Well, Fred, it's certainly been an interesting year, and a couple of things. Obviously, with Joe Biden in office, we can proudly say the word union now. You know that that didn't happen before, and even before Trump, it just wasn't the case.
Right.
We got a different National Labor Relations Board. They're calling for a new vote at Amazon, and we know what happened there. How that was manipulated. There's a lot of strikes going on now. You saw John Deere settle. It took three times. I'm here in Kellogg's. The workers at Kellogg's
got a settlement. That's Kellogg. That's great.
Yeah. Now the membership is voting on that this Sunday, so we'll have an answer to that. But nonetheless, there's a lot of work stoppages going on. There's a lot of workers saying, you know what? We need a union. I talked earlier about Starbucks. Starbucks has never had a union. They've been around for 50 years, and they're trying to unionize over in Buffalo. So with everything that's going on, Fred, I mean, you're in the middle of it all. You know what's going on. I'd like to get your take on worker power in 2021. It's a new day, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely a new day. We're seeing the revitalization of a strong workers' movement where workers throughout this country are saying, look, enough is enough. You know, we want to share in the wealth that we helped to create, and workers is having the courage to stand up now, and they're demanding, you know, wages and benefits where they could support their families. And this is a great moment in terms of workers' power, in terms of workers realizing that the best way to achieve fair wages and good benefits is through the labor movement, to have a labor union, to collectively bargain. And, you know, this has just been a fantastic turnaround faster than we were, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, we think that the pandemic played a lot into that, because as workers, you know, were, you know, had to sit at home in a lot of cases. A lot of workers was laid off. Companies took a hit, you know, understandably so. You know, their market shares went down. And then what we're seeing at the bargaining table is the companies trying to recoup the losses that they had during COVID on the backs of workers. And workers are saying, no, enough is enough, okay, and they're standing up. But the good thing is workers are now starting to realize that the best way for us to get, as workers, to get fair wages and good benefits is we have to form a union. We have to collectively bargain. And it's been a renaissance. I mean, and you know, I was in a meeting yesterday, and around the country, there's somewhere about 51 strikes that's taking place around the country. So it's an amazing time for workers. It's an amazing time for the labor movement. And, you know, we just need to get the we need to pass the PRO Act to make it easier for workers to organize without interference from their employers. We need to pass the Build Back Better bill, you know, to allow workers to, you know, have the right to not only organize, but the right to collectively bargain and to ensure first contracts and eliminate the interference of employers. So this is a amazing time, and we have a president who is fully supportive of the labor movement and working people. So we just need to keep plowing forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to your point, the pandemic certainly has changed everything. And Fred, you remember, oh, you're an essential worker. We need you. We'll give you an extra dollar, maybe $2 hero pay. And then all of a sudden that disappeared, you know? Yeah. All of a sudden you didn't matter, okay?
Right. It was such an amazing turnaround. I mean, you know, I grew up in an era, Flash, where essential workers was considered police, firemen, those that deal with public safety and public health, and in factories around this country, you know, and you know, workers was termed essential workers for the purpose of, you know, I ain't going to say forcing them, but encouraging them to come to work.
Right.
And now workers want to be treated like essential workers, you know.
Exactly.
So it's been a fascinating turnaround. But I think that, you know, we're at a point where workers are saying enough is enough. And the labor movement is positioned. We're engaged in those fights. We're working through the AFL-CIO with all of our affiliates. And this is an amazing time.
It is certainly an interesting time in America, and one that we're in the middle of being part of the labor movement. Fred Redman, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, Steelworker for Life. You take care, my brother. We'll talk to you in the new year, okay?
Okay. Thanks a lot, Flash. You have a happy holiday and get some much-deserved rest, and we'll come out fighting in 2022.
I love it. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the Metal Trades Department of the Labor Federation and the man in charge of worker safety in Michigan. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.